Inspector.
I already know the killer's identity. John Evans.
By the end, Evans was just sitting there rocking, singing a nursery rhyme. All about the gingerbread man.
I've had too much to drink.
I think you've had just the right amount.
Why won't you ever let me have any fun?
You don't want to arrest me. Not now.
What are you talking about?
Bank job. All right, a big one.
He was cutting my hair. Why'd he do that?
Donald's in jail. He's been charged with attacking a girl called Sylvia.
Never. You see that girl? Him love her.
You're a disgrace to the uniform. When Nelson hears about this, you won't be my problem anymore. Good riddance.
A black police van rolls past a row of identical policemen. Standing with them is a solitary woman. Created by Dominique Maloney, WPC 56. Great Pretenders, written by Dominique Maloney. Gina and Frank are watching a film in a cinema.
Come on, don't with that. Tell him to put Dave Dietz in.
Beside them, Bill slips his arm around Kathy.
I thought he was one of that City Hall bunch. Well,
she smiles, and he kisses her. Gina glances sideways at them, then looks fondly at Frank. She holds his hand and leans over to kiss him, but knocks his bag of popcorn on the floor. They bang heads as Gina goes to help him retrieve some spilled popcorn. A man sitting with Fenton in a pub drains his glass.
Nice, Arch. Nice, Tom.
Brody sidles over to Fenton.
What do I want to say tonight?
Do you mind? People know me in here.
Well, I couldn't very well come down the station now, could I?
You don't come to me ever, right?
That bank job. It's going ahead. Remember that kid, Kevin? Well, I finally got him to open his mouth.
I'm listening.
Must have been his nerves or something, but you should have been there. It was great. I mean, he's knocking back pint after pint. I mean, once he started talking, I don't think he's ever going to shut up.
Something you two have in common, then. So when's the job?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Well, I've only just got him to talk now, haven't I?
Which bank am I supposed to guess?
A bank on Brook Street, 11 a.m.
Fenton passes Brody some cash.
Pleasure doing business with you, amigo.
In the cinema, Kathy pushes Bill's hand from her thigh.
Poor Frank. Mayor-elect, and all night people have been buttonholing him for favors, and from now on, everybody...
Bill, stop it!
Stop what?
You two, pack it in or you're out.
Yeah, all right, Bab, you can turn your little light off now. Just because a man wouldn't touch you with a barge pole.
I heard that.
Get out. All right! Can't you people take a joke?
You couldn't keep your mouth shut. It's not funny.
Hey, we can still make last orders. I'm by.
I don't know. I'm on at work tomorrow.
Don't remind me.
Hey?
Nothing.
Oh, that's our bus there. Right, we'll say goodnight. Come on, Gina.
See you tomorrow if I've still got a job. It'll be fine. Mr. Nelson's not as scary as he looks. But Sergeant Fenton is.
Hurry up, you're going to miss it.
Night.
What's that about?
Just work stuff. Shall we go for that drink then?
I've got a better idea.
I was thinking we should take the girls abroad this summer. Take the blue train to the Côte d'Azur. They'd love it.
We'll see.
Jack smoking in bed.
Should I be worried about you?
Worried?
You've not been yourself lately. Maybe you should go and see Dr. Hurley again.
Ugh, you know I can't bear that disgusting little Freudian. You know he actually believes that cigarettes are like nipples. Or teats, as he calls them. I'm sorry about your birthday, but I'm fine, really. I just had one too many cocktails. Can we put it behind us? Please?
He nods and smiles. She kisses him, then settles down under the bedclothes and switches off a bedside lamp. In semi-darkness, Jack takes a thoughtful drag of his cigarette.
It's too cold.
good for a walk.
Come on, let's see warm up.
When's this car of yours going to be finished?
You can't rush a work of art. I want my girl to ride in style.
Bill, not here.
I don't mind in the pictures.
It's dark in there.
It's dark here.
Somebody's coming.
There's nobody.
Bill, don't. Bill, I don't want to.
You never want to do anything, do you?
I'm sorry. Just think we should wait, that's all.
And down that not to look for it.
Bill, please. Bill, don't leave me here!
Daytime. A coffin's lowered into a grave.
Today, we lay William Parker to rest. No death passes easily. But it is especially hard when the life ended is one of someone so young, so full of innocence. At times like this, we must remember that innocence is a state of grace, and it is in this state that our children, the ones who leave us too soon, remain.
A man in a raincoat with a camera is watching from behind a tree.
Let us turn to Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters.
Coulson's mind drifts back to when he was a young sergeant leading a search of woodland.
Keep your eyes peeled and your traps shut. That means you, Pratt. I would nothing miss. Darts will search the entire area again.
Yes, Sergeant Coulson.
Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death.
Young Coulson strikes a man handcuffed to a chair while Pratt looks on.
Confess it, Evans!
Confess! In the presence of my enemy.
Pratt looks uneasy as the beating continues.
Run, as fast as you can. You can't catch me.
My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Amen.
Amen.
As the small group of mourners slowly starts to disperse, Gina goes over to Mr. Marsh.
Good of you to come, Mr. Marsh.
I wasn't sure that it was my place to.
I'm sure they appreciate everyone being here.
Jack approaches the man in the raincoat.
Unless you'd like your next picture to be of your tonsils, I suggest you take your camera and leave.
Just doing my job.
Yeah, and I'm just doing mine.
Oh, really? Found the other missing boy, have you?
It's called instinct. You can't teach it. The moment I clapped eyes on John Evans, I knew that he'd done something sickening to those boys. My only regret is that he died with a bedsheet round his neck. Should have been a hangman's noose.
At Brinford Police Station, Fenton's handing out handguns to a small queue of uniformed officers. A tea lady passes a cup and saucer to Pratt.
Oh, you're a treasure, Glenda. You know that.
We're going to stop a bank raid. Probably have to use our weapons.
Really? I don't see you with a gun.
Yeah, he has to hit puberty first.
Right, listen up. Timing's tight on this one, so I want you sharp and I want you prepared. Robbery's planned for 11 a.m. I think you'll agree that's cutting it fine. So no mucking about. Eddie, look alive, son. Let's get into position early and familiarise ourselves with the layout so we can prepare for any cock-ups. Let's move!
Go get them, girls.
I'd bring you out with us, Pratt, but I don't have the van suspension could take.
You got the guns, I got the buns.
You're sure of your information on the science, Sergeant?
100%, sir. Oh, and one other thing, sir.
Having clocked Gina entering, Fenton whispers something in Nelson's ear. Fenton then waits for Nelson to leave before going over to Gina, who's witnessed the confidence.
Better smarten up, love. Chief Inspector Nelson wants to see you in his office.
Now.
Yes, Sergeant.
Fenton opens a door for her into a lobby, then knocks on Nelson's office door.
Come in.
Fenton listens as Gina walks in.
Yes. Well, what do you want?
Sir, I thought you wanted to see me.
You? What for?
My mistake, sir.
Something you're not telling me, Dawson?
No, sir.
All right, then. Back to work.
Thank you, sir.
She steps out.
One word from me.
He leaves Gina rattled but relieved. Jack to Pratt.
The arrogance of the man. He talks about the case like he solved it.
As far as Coulson's concerned, he did solve it.
By questioning only one suspect.
Who said he did?
Wait, you're saying there was a second suspect?
Yeah, his name was Henry Fuller. Runs the bakery on Portland Street.
I know that bakery.
Yeah, of course you do. They make the best cakes in the world.
I know. You tried their chocolate eclairs?
Ooh.
Any idea why the baker was questioned?
Ah, sorry. You'll have to ask him yourself.
Thanks.
Jack fetches his coat.
Well, come on then.
Me, sir.
You can talk to the wife, and I might even buy you a cake.
Instantly cheering up, Gina grabs her cap and hurries after him, passing a curious Kathy. Fenton's in the front of a van parked outside Renham's bank. In the back are the armed officers.
As soon as they pull up, we'll make our move. Fletch, you block them in with the van. Rest of us will surround the vehicle. Any luck and they won't know what's hit them.
Fenton wafts a hand in front of his face.
Oh, that is just... Come on, who was that? Hey, Eddie. Oh, that's not even funny, that.
Eddie stifles a laugh.
Just the two, huh?
A woman serving a customer when Jack and Gina enter the baker's shop.
Thank you. That's lovely. Sit down then.
Mr. Fuller. Detective Inspector Burns.
Fuller puts down a tray of loaves.
Detective? Do you mind if I ask you a few questions?
Fuller turns to go into the back.
Didn't I see you at the funeral this morning?
Me and Arthur Town?
Of course. I was just wondering if you knew the boy.
It's no secret that I knew William, him and the other boy, Stanley. They came in here all the time, battling my father on the place.
I just want to clarify a couple of things, Mr. Fuller. Can you explain why you were questioned after the boys disappeared?
Well, because of the row with Stanley's father.
You argued? What about?
Look, I explained all this at the time. Stanley was half-starved. He had lice. Bruises on him sometimes. Well, I had to say something. Father didn't take too kindly to it. He'd had a few too many drinks. He took a swing at me, so I hit him.
I see.
Then he started shouting all about the place that I was interested in kids, you know. Said Stanley couldn't set foot in the place again. Well, of course, everyone knew it was rubbish, but when the boys disappeared, my name was first on the list until the arrest of that halfwit.
Right. What about Stanley's father? Do you think he could have done something to the boys?
He was in prison at the time.
1925.
Yeah, that was the year the shop was opened.
You haven't changed a bit, Mrs. Fuller. And who's the other lady?
I forget her name. I've had so many shop assistants over the years, I've lost count. Isn't that right, Gracie? So, can I help you with anything else, Detective?
Actually, yes.
He points to an eclair.
Two of those, please.
Mrs. Fuller looks a little agitated as she boxes up the cakes.
On the house.
That's very kind. Thank you. If you remember anything else, you can reach me at the station.
Jack and Gina head out of the shop.
We shouldn't have lied.
We need supplies. What's the point of bringing it all up again? It's in the past!
No, really. Maybe for you it is.
She hurls the framed photo on the floor.
You're right in the head, woman!
Don't buzz off!
Trouble in paradise. You better go back in.
She might say more with him out the way.
You're not going to eat my cake, are you, sir?
Can't promise anything.
Gina gets out of the car and Jack gives her an encouraging nod when she stops to look back. A careworn and teary Mrs. Fuller's sweeping the smashed glass from the photo frame into a dustpan. Gina sees her through a glass panel in the door and removes her cap before entering the shop. Mrs. Fuller glances up and continues with her task.
Are you all right, Mrs. Fuller?
Oh, yes, I just had an accident.
You remember her name, don't you, Mrs. Fuller? Please, we just want to try to understand what happened all those years ago. Even the smallest details can be useful.
Morning, love.
Oh, sorry, we're closed. Sorry.
The disgruntled customer turns on his heels and Mrs. Fuller closes the door behind him.
Her name was Sarah Freeman. She worked with us for a couple of months. Henry's father rented her a room upstairs. I never liked her very much. Oh, that's not very charitable of me, I suppose. Her husband was killed in the Great War, although she never talked about it much. Never said much about anything.
Did she get along with anyone else?
Well, she was very good with the children that came into the shop. Those two boys took a shine to her. So it seems did Henry. She was very beautiful, you know. That picture doesn't do her justice.
Did your husband admit the affair?
No. He didn't need to. One day, Sarah just upped and left without a word. Never even handed in a notice. Henry's father was furious. Not Henry, though. He just kept quiet. Wouldn't look me in the eye. He still can't.
I wouldn't have liked her very much either, Mrs. Fuller.
Boredom has set in the back of the van outside the bank. Fenton checks his watch, then through his wing mirror, sees a car pull up outside the entrance.
Lighten up.
A man gets out, walks around the car, and takes a birdcage from someone sitting in the back. Then, a little old lady gets out and the man hands her the cage. Now, Fenton's in Nelson's office.
I'm sorry, sir.
Sorry doesn't even cover it, Fenton. You made a complete laughingstock of us. I've just had Sullivan on the phone from the Brimford Times asking why an armed gang made off with hundreds of pounds in cash while all of my officers were standing around picking their teeth on the other side of town.
I'll catch them, sir.
Forgive me if that doesn't exactly fill me with confidence. What is it?
Thank you, Sergeant Pratt. Put him through. Chief Coulson. Yes, of course, sir.
In the bakery yard.
Does the name Sarah Freeman jog your memory?
Right, of course. That's it.
Let's drop the pretense, shall we? You remember her all too well, don't you, Mr. Fuller?
I made a mistake a long time ago. I love my wife.
I couldn't care less. And since your wife seems to know all about it, I'm pretty confused as to why you're still covering it up.
It's just not something I'm proud of, that's all.
Would you say you're a private man, Mr. Fuller?
No more than anyone else.
Is that the room she rented? Did the two of you find privacy there?
No, never.
Not with your wife under the same roof. I see. Where then?
Is this really necessary?
Where?
In the woods.
Could you have been seen?
No. We were careful.
Did the boys see you two together?
Of course not. What are you getting at?
Tell me about when Sarah left. Was it before or after the boys went missing?
I don't remember.
You don't remember much, do you, Mr. Fuller? And I imagine if those boys saw something they shouldn't have, you wouldn't want them remembering either.
I never touched them.
Then tell me why Sarah left. Without warning, without reason.
Because she was pregnant.
Fenton punches Brody in the face.
Sonny!
You will be.
I told you anything, I now I swear!
He forces Brody's head down the toilet.
give me the wrong address?
Oh, really? I didn't notice.
Which means either he's onto us or... I don't know, maybe the gang's in trust him.
Something I intend to ask the little Rod personally.
No, wait. You can't. He'll know I grasped.
That's your problem. Now, tell me where he is.
Just listen to me, all right? Just listen. You'll never get him to talk.
I have powers of persuasion, don't you worry.
If you arrest him now, you'll just have him to show for it. But if you wait, there's still a chance you can catch the old gang.
I'm listening.
Kev's on his way over here now. Let me talk to him. If he doesn't know you're following him, he'll lead you straight to him.
What makes you think he's going to lead me anywhere other than his mum's house?
He won't. He won't. I promise. I'll make sure of it.
You better.
Fenton leaves Brody doubled over from a punch in the stomach. Fuller to Jack.
She said if I didn't give her money for the baby, she'd tell Grace everything.
So you did as she asked?
For 2 years. So it got too hard to hide the payments and I stopped. I half expected her to come back and ruin everything. I never heard from her again.
Can you remember her address?
Well, I doubt she's still there.
Let me worry about that.
Birmingham. 35 Jellicoe Road. Please don't tell my wife anything. She couldn't have children herself. It would kill her.
Kev walks into the pub.
Rocket,
right. Yeah,
check that.
Sure. There we go, amigo.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Do you think Mr. Fuller's telling the truth?
We'll find out once I've tracked down this Sarah Freeman. Presuming she ever left here alive.
You mean he could have killed all three of them?
You'd be surprised what people are capable of. Good work today, Dawson.
Thank you, sir. Not interrupting, am I?
Not at all. I should get back. Ladies?
Kathy checks Jack's out of earshot.
What are you playing at?
What do you mean?
I mean you. Flirting with a married man.
I wasn't flirting with him.
How do you think Frank would feel if he saw you carrying on like that?
And what about you and Eddie? Always having cosy chats. I bet Bill would have something to say about that and all.
I'm not interested in Eddie and you know it.
Yeah, but he doesn't though, does he? Which is just the way you like it.
Fine. Turn it around on me if you want to. But Frank's a good man and he doesn't deserve you stringing him along.
It's easy for you to say. At least you've got some excitement in your life.
You ought to make up your mind what you want.
In the pub.
I ain't scared of him. No, I'm just saying I wouldn't blame you if you was.
But I'm not. I can't get my money right now.
That's the spirit. Don't take no for an answer.
Fenton, who's been watching in plain clothes, shares a passing look with Brody as he follows Kev out. Deborah's wearing a fur coat when Jack gets home.
I'm so glad you're home. Don't I look fabulous?
Where did you get that?
It's from Milan, or should I say Milano?
Did your father give it to you?
It's so soft. I think I'm going to wear it to sleep in from now on.
Deborah, where did you get the coat?
Really, Jack, is that all you can say?
Just answer the question.
I got it from Lewis's on shop credit.
Without even asking me?
Well, there's no need to make a fuss. You'll pay it back in a few months.
We can't afford it.
I thought you wanted me to look my best.
Take it off. I'm returning it.
No.
Deborah, I mean it. We have to take it back.
No, you're not taking it!
They struggle.
No, let go! No!
Deborah, stop!
No, let me go! Let me go!
She crumples in tears.
Okay. Shh. Shh. I'm sorry.
Keeping a modest distance, Fenton follows Kev under a railway arch and past a man tinkering with a car. He watches Kev duck into a doorway. A small boy with a dirty face, wearing short trousers and a knitted balaclava, approaches Fenton.
Mister, spare some change.
Get lost.
Go on.
I said scram.
Kev's ejected by two men.
Go on, sling your hook.
I'll be back in on.
Yeah?
Ed is washing the police van.
All I says was, didn't you double check the address?
Bill appears with a bunch of flowers.
Everything all right?
Yeah.
Water needs changing.
Eddie walks off with his bucket and Bill steps up to Kathy.
Sorry. About last night.
You should be. I had to walk home on my own.
I know I shouldn't have acted in that way. I can't help it, Kathy. You drive me crazy. I can't keep my hands off you.
Well, you're going to have to, Bill, because I'm not the sort of girl to fool around, so if that's what you want, you better find someone else.
I don't want anybody else.
The flowers.
They're beautiful.
Just like you.
On a secluded, moonlit path, a man's footsteps quicken behind those of a blonde-haired woman wearing a long, light-coloured coat. Holding a knife, he grabs her round the neck and pulls her off the path into some bushes. Morning. At the police station, Gina approaches Jack's desk with an armful of files.
I typed up your report, sir. Had to do a fair bit of guesswork. Your handwriting's terrible.
Just leave them there.
She notices a scratch on his neck where Deborah struck him.
Is there something else you wanted, Dawson?
No, sir.
You better have the right location this time, Fenton, or heads will roll. The first being yours.
Right, I need 6 volunteers for a raid on a mechanic's garage. Looks like I've managed to locate the hideout of the bank robbers. I'd say we all looked pretty foolish yesterday. And it wasn't me who drove the van up a one-way street, was it, Fletcher? So who's with me?
Sergeant.
Wolf whistles greet Kathy, who's had a new blonde hairdo.
All right, all right. Roll your tongues back in, lads. You've got work to do.
Wow, you look amazing, Kathy. A real knockout.
Thank you, Officer Coulson.
Officer?
I think you know I'm already spoken for, Eddie, and I'd appreciate it if you acted accordingly.
Eddie! Move your feet.
Dawson, you're needed in the interview room. Husband and wife want to make a report.
What about, Sergeant?
Wouldn't say.
4 men are playing cards round a table at the back of the garage as Fenton and some of his men creep up on them with their guns drawn. More officers burst in through an archway blocked off by a sheet of corrugated metal.
Put your hands in the air, put your hands, officer! Get down on the floor, slowly! Slowly! Eddie, check the car. Cough them, lads. Keep them covered, Fletch. Talk to me, Eddie!
Clear in the back.
Keep them covered.
Over here, Sergeant.
Banknotes and a cash bag.
That's my boy. Go and fetch the camera out of the van.
Yes, Sarge.
Good lad.
Fenton slips some of the cash into his tunic.
She was attacked.
Can you tell me what happened, Mrs. Cook?
Last night on my way home from work, I went through the park and this man...
Show her, Mary. Just show her.
Mary reluctantly removes her headscarf.
Now, he didn't hurt her or nothing, but I still think something should be done. Cutting off a woman's head like that, I mean, you'd have to be sick in the head, wouldn't you?
Mrs. Cook, I know this is difficult, but I have to ask. Did this man do anything else to you?
What do you mean, anything else?
Mr. Cook, perhaps you'd like to step out of the room for a moment.
I'm going nowhere until I know what's going on. Mary?
He had a knife.
You mean...
Mary's husband stands up.
You let him...
It was rape, Mr. Cook.
Don't you dare say that word to me. Don't you dare. I won't have people saying that about my wife, do you mean me? No. No, someone cut her hair, that's all. Tell her, Mary. I need some air.
He walks out, and Mary's eyes remain fixed on the floor. Gina pulls a chair up beside her.
It was my own fault. Philip told me to take the bus, but I lied to save the fare. Just for little things. Treats for the children. None of this was your fault.
You saw the way my husband looked at me. What if that never changes?
I just need to get a few details. Did you manage to get a good look at him?
It was dark, but I remember he looked ordinary. He didn't have a beard. His hair was dark, I think. He wasn't tall, but he was strong.
I can't imagine how hard this must be for you. Are you prepared to make a formal statement?
I suppose so.
Well, just go over some of the details to make sure they're all correct before you sign it. Is that all right?
How long will that take?
Not long. Promise.
What about my husband?
See if I can find him.
Gina opens the door to see Philip sitting outside with his head in his hand. He looks up and through the open doorway at his pretty but frail-looking wife, then gets slowly to his feet. Dressed in drab shades of brown and beige, he looks stricken as he sits down beside Mary. Gina watches sorrowfully as they embrace and Mary sobs on Philip's shoulder. Fenton trots up the front steps of an imposing red brick Gothic building. Now he's on the stand in a courtroom where Palmer's in the dock.
Can you describe how the defendant came to be arrested on the night of Miss Stewart's attack?
We received a call from a member of the public, a Mr. Kenneth Davis, at approximately 9:25 p.m.
And what was Mr. Davis' account of the incident?
Mr. Davis and his friend heard a woman's screams in the proximity of Victoria Park. When they ran to assist the woman, they saw her lying on the ground and Mr. Palmer was crouching over her. When they challenged him, he tried to run away, but they managed to apprehend him and hand him over to us when we arrived on the scene a short while later.
And what was Mr. Palmer's physical state when you got there, Sergeant Fenton?
When we arrested him, he had blood on his hands and clothes, and he was highly agitated.
What did you do next, Sergeant Fenton?
We took him into custody, sir, where we later questioned him about his reasons for being in the park. At first, he said he was just having a walk. However, he later changed his story and claimed to have had a relationship with Miss Stewart. Yes,
quiet in the court. Please go on, Sergeant Fenton.
I took it as a cowardly attempt to besmirch an innocent girl's good character.
My lord, that was conjecture.
Mr. Walker, I must advise you to proceed with caution.
Sergeant Fenton, what reason would Mr. Palmer have to invent such a story?
To justify his intentions towards her.
And what, in your opinion, were his intentions?
My lord, the sergeant's opinion.
I think he followed Miss Stewart through the park with the intention of taking her virtue.
My lord, that is pure speculation.
Members of the jury, please pay no regard to Sergeant Fenton's opinions. It will be a matter for you to decide whether the defendant changed his story because he was lying and seeking to justify other intentions or not.
Gina drops a file on Jack's desk.
What's this?
There's been another attack in the park.
When?
Last night. Her name's Mary Cook. Her hair was cut off with a knife, same as with Anna Pierce.
Thanks. I'll take it from here.
Sir, both the women were blonde, just like Sylvia Stewart.
Dawson!
Donald Palmer is being sentenced today. You could go to the judge and tell him there have been others.
Look, I know you mean well, but you have to face facts. If Sylvia's accused him, there's nothing we can do. It's for the courts to decide now.
Miss Stewart's an attractive young girl, isn't she, Mr. Palmer? I've no doubt she's a friendly girl, too. Friendly enough to smile at a bus conductor on her way home from work, yes?
My lord, this is irrelevant.
Choose your words carefully, Mr. Walker.
Mr. Palmer, did you follow Miss Stewart off the bus?
I tell her, Miss, she finish. So we walked together through the park.
And you expect the jury to believe that you went with you willingly?
It's the truth.
Well, forgive me, Mr. Palmer, but the part that confuses me is where Miss Stewart ends up, screaming for her life as she's beaten unconscious. If you are innocent of this despicable act, perhaps you'd like to inform us who else was responsible.
I don't know who it was. Just a man.
Just a man. No, this man, covered with blood and fleeing from the scene, it was some phantom who apparently no one but Mr. Palmer could see. Not even Miss Stewart.
During a recess, Mr. Stewart indicates for his daughter to sit on an empty bench in a wide corridor, then walks off. Sylvia sits down and takes out a cigarette, but doesn't have time to light it before Gina approaches and sits beside her.
Mind if I sit here? We've met at the hospital.
I remember.
How are you?
What do you want?
Just to talk. Sylvia, I know you're scared right now, but just think how Donald must be feeling.
Serves him right then, wouldn't you say?
It's time to start telling the truth.
I have told the truth.
Do you really think you'll be able to live with yourself knowing that you've sent an innocent man to prison?
Oh, I don't have to listen to this.
There have been other attacks in the park, Sylvia. Two other women raped. That could have been you if Donald hadn't scared him off. Is this any way to repay him? If you care about Donald at all, you'll do what's right. Mr. Stewart.
Officer. Come on, Sylvie.
Will the defendant please stand? Will the foreman please stand? Mr. Foreman, have the jury reached a verdict on count one of this indictment upon which you are all agreed?
We have, Your Honor.
Mr. Foreman, on count one of the indictment, causing grievous bodily harm with intent, contrary to Section 18 of the Offences Against the Person Act, 1861, do you find the defendant, Donald Palmer, guilty or not guilty?
Guilty.
Guilty! Guilty!
Thank you, members of the jury. Mr. Palmer, I am appalled at your callous attitude towards a country that has hitherto welcomed you to its shores. You are a disgrace to your people and a danger to ours. I find it incumbent on me to pass a severe sentence so that it may act as a deterrent to others in your position, tempted to abuse this country's hospitality. You shall be imprisoned for no less than a period of 15 years.
15 years!
Take him down.
He didn't do it. He didn't do it.
My lord, Miss Stewart has something to say.
He didn't do it, my lord.
Sylvia.
He didn't do it. Donald would never hurt me.
Miss Stewart, think very carefully about what you're saying.
I'm sorry, my lord, but I lied. It wasn't Donald. The man who attacked me was white. He had a knife.
Mr. Walker, Mr. Lewis, please approach the bench.
Donald, I'm sorry.
Gina looks thrilled at Sylvia's change of heart. Fenton casts her a severe look, but as soon as he's turned away, a smile spreads across her face. At the police station...
I want to see Inspector Nelson.
No chance.
What's your reaction to Donald Palmer's acquittal, Inspector Nelson? A second embarrassment in as many days, wouldn't you say?
Sergeant Pratt, escort Mr. Sullivan out, please.
With pleasure.
Did your officers judge Mr. Palmer on the colour of his skin?
Come on, son, out you go.
Are they going to arrest the right man this time?
Go on, out.
Now that is a good question.
With respect, sir, it's not our fault the girl lied.
Apart from Constable Dawson, did anyone actually take the time to look into Palmer's claims?
Oh, she looked into them all right. Two nights ago, I had to rescue her from a coloured nightclub.
Dawson?
Sir,
she'd gone in there without permission, stirring up trouble, just like today. Turning up at court, influencing a witness to change her statement. She should be sacked.
For what exactly? Being right? We should have listened to her in the first place.
Oh, I should have known you'd stick up for her.
What's that supposed to mean?
I think it's pretty clear to everyone, Burns.
All right, enough. What's done is done.
You're going to let her get away with it, sir?
I'm going to concentrate on what's important. The fact that three women have now been attacked at knife point, and it's happened on our watch. From now on, we pool our resources, and we step up our patrols in Victoria Park. If we don't stop this man, he will strike again.
Jack gets home to find the house filled with steam and smoke from a pot left unattended on the hob of an old-fashioned freestanding cooker.
Deborah?
Daddy?
It's all right, girls.
Damn it.
Girls, just stand over there. Everything's all right. Everything's fine.
Deborah!
Where's Mommy? Okay, girls, into the living room. Come on, run.
Deborah!
Deborah's lying face down on the bed.
You left something on the stove.
Leave me alone.
The girls are all alone down there.
No, just let me sleep.
Deborah, you could have all burned to death. Get up and see to your children.
Stop it, Jack, please, I can't.
She curls up in a fetal position on the bed. In the Lucky Seven cafe.
Chrome hubcaps. Did you ever save your wages?
What for?
I'll just borrow yours.
Sam's with a group of teddy boys who walk in.
Didn't know it was fancy dress.
Could you walk any slower?
I'm not running in these heels, Gina.
Where are we going?
I forgot to lock the storeroom.
Anyway, do you want a coffee? We'll get a couple of coffees in here.
I don't believe it. It's Marilyn Monroe.
So, do you like it?
I love it.
Am I alone?
Gorgeous. Hey, doesn't she look gorgeous?
Bill kisses Kathy.
Just plain silly beggars.
He's right. Just ignore them. Shall I put some music on?
Good idea.
Kathy goes over to the jukebox. One of the teddy boys snaffles a cake and the woman behind the counter picks up the phone.
What's the book? What are you doing, love? Anyone having a bit of a bun?
Kathy returns to sit beside Bill.
This is your favourite, isn't it, Gina?
Gina gives her a look. Two men in white coats lead Deborah from the house to an ambulance with its rear doors open. Carrying a small suitcase, Jack follows behind.
Adrift in a world of my own.
Please don't let them take me, Jack. Please, Jack.
Jack looks from his distraught wife to one of his daughters, who's watching sadly from an upstairs window. The ambulance doors close on a sobbing Deborah, and Jack goes back into the house. Closing the front door behind him, he stands in the hallway, looking racked with guilt. Two more teddy boys enter the cafe, and one who's sitting with his girlfriend on his knee jumps to his feet.
Yeah, I've got some funk coming in here, yeah, I have. Come to chat with my brother, guy, dear.
He's just talking.
Shut up! No one talks to my bird without my say so.
Johnny!
Having thrown a punch, Johnny chases the other teddy boy outside.
Hey! You talk to my bird! Hey!
He punches him to the ground and kicks him. Blowing his whistle, Eddie comes running to intervene. Scuffle on the ground, Johnny produces a flick knife and stabs Eddie in the side. He scrambles to his feet and sees what he's done.
Like a clown.
Let's go!
Eddie crumples. Gina drops to her knees beside him and frantically starts to unbutton his tunic. Kathy removes his helmet.
I need something, anything, a handkerchief to stop the blood.
That you're
anything!
Still
Kathy cradles Eddie's head in her hands as he begins to lose consciousness.